Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hello.
I got two free smartphones when I switched to Metro PCS.
One for him and one for me.
It's not for you. It's for people like me.
And parrots.
I knew I should have gotten a dog.
Get two free Samsung Galaxy J3 Prime smartphones when you switch two lines to Metro PCS and enjoy a 4G LTE network that's more reliable than ever before. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network are active on Metro PCS in past 90 days. See store for details, terms, and conditions.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and today we have a very special guest. Yes, I do say that often, but I do have some wonderful guests, and this is a wonderful man you're going to love listening to. Healer, shaman, teacher, and writer, Slim Chandler, Shander Shaker, who is a healer and a shaman and a teacher and a wonderful writer, who is going to teach us today about what we have going on in our lives and how we can better ground ourselves for our own sense of integrity and essence within ourselves. And Slim, thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities, and I so very much apologize for my mess up of your name just now.
Good morning, Lisa, from Northern California, and not to worry, you're not the first person who has had a problem. After all, it's a mouthful saying Slim Chandrasekhar.
I'm so glad you said it again, because here I had it like really anally down in my head how I was going to say it and pronounce it, and well, you know, things happen, so that's par for the course. I apologize greatly. Slim, you are such a fascinating man, and I'm so blessed to know you. You've been a Facebook friend of mine, and I've been really intrigued as our relationship has evolved in knowing more and more about the work that you do and what you are all about within your sense of self and your integrity, and you're just such an honorable soul that I really resonate and appreciate very much. Let's get into talking about you personally, Slim. So let's start off with, how did you get the name Slim? I love it.
Well, that's not always the first question that I expected, but I'll tell you. I grew up in India, and after my undergraduate degree, I got a job with Siemens, the German electronics firm in Bombay. And within a few months, they packed me off to Germany to do the corporate training in Germany. And the first 4 months were to learn the German language. So they pushed me off to the boondocks in Bavaria, a small town where no one spoke English. And I was standing at the railway station, and the only other guy was this American, former GI from Texas. And I introduced myself as Antanam Chandrasekhar, and well, you Americans love giving nicknames, so he said, I'll call you Slim, because I was very thin at the time. So that's the story of how I got my nickname. And that is almost 45 years ago.
Oh, wow. You must have really resonated with it for that to trust that as your nickname. I love it. That's a great story, and typical of a Texan to give you one.
Well, you see, what happened was that it made my life much easier during the rest of my stay in Germany, because I could just introduce myself as Slim and not with a very long first name.
Right, and I imagine that it was actually became more of an approachable, layout between you and a stranger in regard to, you know, not knowing how to pronounce someone's name. You know, like I did in the beginning of this show, yes, I will somehow get over myself on that one. But I mean, you open up the door with an easy name with Slim. It doesn't, you know, it invites people in to know more about you. And it's a nice fun name too. So let's get into, you have such an incredible history and such an incredible story of your own personal life. And then as we move on, we'll talk about how you evolved into your spiritual life. But your personal life also has so many growth lessons and aspects to it that really were unexpected for you. And as you were saying, you grew up in India, and at 22 you moved to Germany with your family and had to learn a whole new language. And then not long after that, you moved to America. So you've lived on three completely different continents with which I'm sure had three completely different cultures and experiences. Was there different things you learned as you were moving through this part of your life from India to Germany and then over to America? Were there different appreciations you found?
Yes, very much so, Lisa. Just a small point, when I went to Germany, I went by myself. My parents had engaged me to an Indian girl, which was very much and still is very much the custom in India. And I grew up in a rather conservative South Indian family. And then I pushed off to Germany, and I was supposed to be there only for 2 years. And 3 months before my training ended, I met my future wife, who was from Munich. So I had to call up my dad and tell him he had to disengage me from this very nice Indian lady, which didn't necessarily endear me to him. I got married in Germany, and over the years we had our son and our daughter, who are now 34 and 36 respectively. And I lived in Germany 2 years, became 22 years, and I was a businessman in Germany, first with Siemens as an executive there, and then with a management consulting firm, Arthur D. Little. And in 1988, my family and I were transferred to San Francisco. And so, as you rightly say, I've had this experience of living on three different continents, three different cultures, different languages. And I think that for anyone, I would always say that in order to grow as an individual, and not just spiritually, because we always think of growth as spiritual growth, but it's also growth as a human being, and that is to be exposed to as many different cultures and people in our planet, because our planet is becoming small in the sense that we'll soon be 7 billion people. And even in the United States, our culture is becoming so multi-ethnic, as you know in Florida and as we know in California, that it behooves us to be very open to different cultures. And living on three continents has really opened my heart, my eyes, my mind to these different aspects, Lisa.
That's wonderful. And that's a beautiful growth to take from that experience. You've also gone through a tremendous life change that is one that really touches my heart. And it involves the passing of your beloved wife, Steffi. And you spoke just briefly about having been a venture capitalist and having done that for so many years. Your whole life pretty much changed immediately when your wife was diagnosed in 2001 with breast cancer. Is that right?
That's correct, Lisa. For close to 40 years, my whole world was in the business world. As I said, as an industry manager, executive, as a management consultant, and then as a venture capitalist. And everything was going pretty smoothly. And in early 2001, my wife was diagnosed with bone marrow cancer, and I made the decision to give up my job, my career, and become her full-time caregiver. And I did this for 4.5 years, and there were lessons there too. And then in March of 2005, she passed away. And that's when my own journey of self-discovery began, because when you're a caregiver, you don't have time to think of spirituality or really anything much more than the stress of caregiving. Yeah. And how you're going to make it on from a day-to-day basis, you know?
Yes, yes. And it's, and you know, even in those simple tasks of caring for a loved one, even those are spiritual acts. It may not be something that's a dogma or a practice or a meditation, but those are compassionate human spiritual acts that evolve a soul regardless of what practice or belief system you're in. And it had to have absolutely changed every aspect of who you were having gone through something like that. That's something that really changes the core of the soul, wouldn't you say?
It does, Lisa. And in the spirit of full disclosure to you and to your listeners, I have to admit that I was not a very compassionate or aware or present person when I was in the business world. I have to admit, in retrospect, when I look back, that I was neither a very good or ideal father or a good or ideal husband. I was caught up in the whole issue of career and making money and being a good provider. And much more than that, there was a lot of ego involved. And it's so easy to get caught up in that ego when you are in positions of power. And that I was. In Germany, in Europe, I was an advisor to heads of state and CEOs. And, you know, that can get to your head. And I remember, you know, I'm going to share this with you as I did with someone recently. I had breakfast about 8-9 months ago with a very good friend who used to be my chief technology officer in one of my startups where I was the CEO. And he looked at me across the breakfast table and he said, "You know, Slim, I can tell you this now. You used to be a certifiable SOB." And it took me a minute to get my senses, and I had to admit to him. I said, "Andre, you know what? You're right. You're right. But it's only now when you look back that you say, wow." And when I decided to become a caregiver, I don't know what it was, but at that moment, that seemed to me it was the right thing to do. So I have to honestly say, maybe Spirit was working with me at that time and saying, okay, you're getting a kick in the butt. Now, here's your chance to do something to give back to a loved one what she gave to you for 35 years. That's the way I see it. That's my best guess, Lisa.
Well, that's a beautiful evaluation. But did you feel, as you were coming out of a corporate structure where you're based in your left brain, analytical thinking, and you're rubbing elbows with the elite, and you're definitely pretty enmeshed in your ego, and then all of a sudden you have this life or death situation that presents itself, and it hits you in your core. At that point, did you feel a shift? Did you feel priorities shift? Did you feel your emotional center open up? Did you feel like you wanted to cry? Was there a physical or emotional realization at that point for you that it was like you knew your life was forever changed?
Absolutely, Lisa. You raise a very good point with especially showing emotion and crying. I was known as the guy who didn't show any emotion. I never cried, but when my wife was diagnosed, and especially when it became clear to me a year and a half after the diagnosis and after the initial treatments that we were going to lose her, and that realization hit home, that's when suddenly something dramatically shifted within me, and it was almost like one does a life review, and you go into regret mode initially, and you say, "Oh my God, I wish I had done this, or I wish I had done that," and your heart opens, and suddenly discussions happen between you and your partner that you never did before, and mm-hmm. the quality of those discussions, especially the ones we had in the month before Steffi died, was just amazing. I mean, we just talked about things we had never talked about for 35 years. I mean, how curious is that?
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. And do you think it was your opening or her opening or possibly the opening of both of you in such a vulnerable time in your lives? Was it, do you think that it was, you know, preempted by the vulnerability and there was nothing to hold you back, that you were just free to feel and experience and express?
Well, I can say this openly and honestly. I think the opening was 90% on my side because she was always a very gracious, generous, open-hearted person all her life. She was a giver in the ultimate mm-hmm. sense of the term, and she loved children. She loved animals. She loved people. And she was just so open-hearted, and it took me her getting sick to really open my eyes and my heart to who my wife was. And I'm sorry, this is a little emotional, but that's what it takes. And sometimes you need that catalyst, Lisa.
Right, right. And that's about as powerful of a catalyst and a trigger as there could possibly be, with having a loved one and going through that process of shift and change. And it's also something that, you know, it beautifully demonstrated who you were in your core, even if you didn't know it at that time. And it's interesting because I just was talking about authenticity, and I was actually making a little bit of a snide comment in regard to it of, you know, that there's actually people who don't know how to be real. And so, you know, I'm looking at it with now much more of a compassionate heart and self, because there really is a side of ourselves that we get caught up in as we're going through the rigors of life and taking on a career that may have ego issues or an element where we have to tap into an ego side of ourselves. And doing that for decades or doing that for years on end, you do tend to lose a side of who your authentic self is. So I see that. I feel that. I know where you are today, and I can see where you must have been at that point for having that shift transfer who all of who you are from a venture capitalist to a healer. I mean, does it get any more 180 degrees than that? That's a pretty that's a pretty amazing shift.
When you make that shift, Lisa, at least for me, there is no going back.
Right. Right. It was. It's one of those things when you make that kind of a shift, it's almost like you look at your old self as, you know, an old friend you used to know, and you may not recognize or understand that person as much as you did then, but it's another aspect of who you are. It's just not who you are anymore. And with Steffi, I'm sure, being ill, was it during her diagnosis and her processing of the illness itself, was that an impetus for you to get into the healing arts and shamanic work, or did you wait until after her passing to find that calling, or was that call something that was kind of buzzing in your soul while you were going through the process of taking care of her? How did this evolve for you, your spiritual path?
Lisa, while I was taking care of her, I cannot really say that there was any kind of a spiritual shift. She was a Roman Catholic and a very devout Roman Catholic. Both my kids are baptized, even though they are not practicing. I never converted. I was raised a Hindu, and today I just believe in spirit. But during the caregiving period, I didn't have time to even think about spirit or spiritual paths or spirituality. It was just the stress of managing it on a day-to-day basis until she passed away. And then after she passed away, I went into a void of grieving and just not knowing what the purpose in life was. And I still wasn't thinking about a spiritual path. And a few months into the period after her death, we are talking about the middle of 2005, it seemed like suddenly spirit, the universe, whatever you want to call it, was going into fast forward mode for me, and multiple things started happening. And I'll just relate a couple of those. I was very blessed to meet my partner in life now, Penelope, who has a spiritual path of her own and has had for many years. By coincidence, she too had lost a partner to cancer. And I was given a book to read. I started taking piano and art classes, and I was given a book to read. And this book was Me Life's Many Masters by Dr. Brian Weiss, who lives around the corner from you in Miami. And and I read that book, and I was so... something in that book really triggered something in me. It gave me a clue that Steffi's soul had to move on in order for me to change. And that was a clue that I got out of the book. I started thinking about the soul's purpose and the soul's journey, and I started talking to people. I went to a workshop that was my first such workshop called Practical Spirituality, which was conducted by the Center for Attitudinal Healing, which is around the corner here in Sausalito. And something happened. I became a certified hypnotherapist. I started working with cancer patients on a pro bono basis. And one thing led to the other. I started attending courses and workshops and meeting people and really trying to understand what this was all about. And it's been 5 years, 6 years now since Steffi passed away, and it's been quite a journey because... I'm 67. For 62 years, 61 years of my life, I always like to say I didn't have a spiritual bone in my body, and I had a lot of making up to do.
Well, you had a spiritual bone. You just needed to exercise it a tad, I would say. But what does, out of all
right.
of this, out of all of this, I mean, you've obviously learned and grown so much in a very short period of time. What would you say is a definition for you of spirituality? How do you view your spirituality?
I always have a bit of a problem with the word spirituality itself because that word has a impersonal feeling to it, and it's almost like a word out of the dictionary or the title of a book or a documentary. And when I think of spirituality, I like to think of a spiritual path or a spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. Because when I relate to people and I relate to myself, that makes it a little more personal, trying to understand what is my own spiritual journey, what is my spiritual path, what are my daily practices. And the best way that I think I can explain that is for myself is how am I finding a connection with the Creator, with Divine, with Spirit? How do I manifest that in my daily life? What are my daily practices? How am I behaving towards other people? And I've come to a very simple conclusion. In other words, I've tried to make it simple for myself, and it has to appeal to my left brain, which is still very much active, and there needs to be certain logic. And so I've made it really simple and said, my spiritual path is quite simple. If I can just touch one person every single day, so that whatever I've done, I've said, I've thought, or I've written touches just one person, then I think that that is an important aspect of my spiritual daily practice. And of course, added to that comes I meditate and I have my client practice and trying to manifest really loving kindness in everything you do and say and think. These are aspects. I don't know if that's been helpful, Lisa, but it's sort of the way I think about spirituality.
Yes, that's very helpful. It's very complete. It comes through. I understand where you're coming from in regard to the word spirituality because it kind of puts it in a in its own little intellectual category. And spirit is so, you know, fluid, and there is no limit, that there's so many ways of connecting and contacting divinity within yourself that, you know, it's limitless. So it's individual. So yes, I would say that is a beautiful explanation of how it resonates with you. And I'm sure that, you know, you have had you have so many things going on in regard to, you're saying if you touch one person, you know, you feel like you're purposeful. But with all the things that you do and all the things that you have going on and all the things that you are putting out there on a humanitarian level and on a spiritual intention and level, whether it's conscious or unconscious, it's still a spiritual positive that's going out from you to the universe. You also have a CD that the proceeds benefit an orphanage that you help support over in India. Would you like to talk to us a little bit about this wonderful gift you offer humanity?
I would love to, Lisa. It's actually one of my pet subjects, talking about the orphanage and then about the CD. And there's a lovely story with regard to the orphanage. The Christmas after my wife died, my son and I went to India to see my father, who was then 89. He's now 95. And we had lovely talks with my dad, and I sat with him alone one day, and I said, I'm still so grieving. I'm at a loss as to what I do with the rest of my life. And there's got to be some way that I can put a little more meaning into what I do. And all he did was, he said, get into the car. And he made my son and I get into the car, and he came with us into the center of the city of Bangalore in South India, and he took us to this orphanage for blind kids. Lisa, there are 20 million blind children in India, and it's a whole different subject why there are so many. But we saw 600 orphans out there, over half of them blind, and many of them, of course, orphans but not blind. He likes to pair them up, this entrepreneur. And our hearts were touched. And we were so moved. And my son said, Dad, we've got to do something. So we began a program where my kids and I do a feeding of 700 kids today, three times a year, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's a pittance compared to, you know, how wealthy we are in the West. And it feeds these kids, and I also connected with the corporate world in India and helped get the orphanage computers, books, and other equipment. And I try and go to India at least once a year, and when I go there, I volunteer. And then a couple of years after Steffi passed away, I created the CD, The Magic of Gayatri. And it's a rendition of the Gayatri Mantra, which is one of the oldest Sanskrit prayers known to humanity. And I have never sung in my life, Lisa. And so Penelope likes to say, this was channeled. And whatever the story is, I created the CD, and my fellow musicians and I decided that a portion of the proceeds would go to this orphanage. And long story short, Penelope and I were just in India a few weeks ago, and I told this entrepreneur, Mr. Rakum, who runs the orphanage, that I would give him the rights to copying 2,000 copies of the CD, and all the proceeds of all the CDs he sold would go to this orphanage.
Wow. That's wonderful.
And it just at that time, 5 years ago, it seemed the right thing to do, and it's absolutely been borne out that it's the right thing to do. And I have to share with you that this time when we went at lunchtime, and Penelope and I were in the office talking to this gentleman who founded the orphanage, and the children are sitting on the floor beginning to eat their meals, as is the custom in India. And all of a sudden, right, in the background, we hear 200 voices singing the Gayatri Mantra.
Oh.
And Mr. Rakum, the entrepreneur, the founder of the orphanage, told us that I had started something some years ago with teaching them the Gayatri Mantra, and they sing it as a prayer before every meal.
Oh, wow. What a compliment, huh, Slim? That's a huge...
Well, it's more than a compliment. It's just so beautiful. It's so touching.
Right.
That act of teaching 100 of these kids 3 years ago the Gayatri Mantra, now the whole school has taken it up, and within the school or orphanage there are Muslim kids, Hindu kids, Christian kids, Buddhist kids, probably atheist kids. And it doesn't matter. They chant the Gayatri Mantra, and they probably recite the Lord's Prayer. It doesn't matter.
Oh, that's wonderful. So even though your aim is to affect one person, you're affecting at least the school every day, in addition to what you do and what you put out and what you give. So you're really underestimating yourself in regard to your effect on this planet. I mean, that's what those children are singing and what resonates within them and how they bring it home or they're in the orphanage, how they bring it to each other and what they create within themselves. That's a beautiful testament to humanity and spirit and growth and just love. You know, that's love.
You know, Lisa, my view is, I think we've all heard of the butterfly effect, that a butterfly flapping its wings in Brazil has an impact on something happening in the Arctic Circle or somewhere in Japan. And it's like,
yeah,
that, you know, when somebody creates a CD or writes a book, the intention shouldn't be, oh my God, I wish it sells 100,000 copies or 1 million copies or that I get onto Oprah. If the intention is, look, I just hope it touches one person and shifts one person's thinking or changes their life, then I truly believe that butterfly effect happens. I mean, if it's good and
yes,
it's authentic and if it comes from the heart, it's going to shift people and change people. So I don't do any marketing for the CD. People find it on the internet through the website. I have the most wonderful stories based on emails I get from different corners of the world about how somebody found the CD, and in listening to it, it caused some healing or shifted something, and that's what I love. And it's not,
wow,
about consumerism or mass marketing or trying to become a guru or a teacher. It's about touching people, and I come back to this theme again and again and again.
Right, and that's the other piece is, you know, you're doing so much of this, and you know you're not waving your flag and you're not saying look at me. This is just coming, you know, unconditionally from your heart, and for me that means that it's going to have that much more of an impact upon society and humanity. And I'm sure that you've also been influenced by others along on the path. In addition, you also have a book that you're writing that's going to be published next year, Real Men Rattle, which I love. That's a great title, Slim. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what was your inspiration for this book, and how did you feel in regard to the process of writing the book? Did you find yourself going through a little bit of a metamorphosis as well?
Yes, I did. I have, besides doing reading business plans and writing business documents, I have never done much writing before. I think I have to precede the book idea with just how I became a shaman. May I do that, Lisa? Because
of
it has
course
a bearing on the
yes
book.
Yes.
About four or five years ago, and a year after Steffi died, Penelope took me to a workshop, a two-day workshop, a conference in Scottsdale, which was called Celebrate Your Life. It's quite famous. And there were speakers like Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and Marianne Williamson and a lot of other people, beautiful speakers. And it was very inspiring, and that was part of my journey of self-discovery. And one speaker especially really spoke to me, and it was Alberto Violdo, who is a shaman who studied with the Peruvian Inca mountain shamans. And I bought his book, Shaman, Healer, Sage. And then I put it aside. And 2 years later, I pick up the book, I read it, and I'm so moved and inspired by his story that I told Penelope, I have to do this work. And I immediately signed up, and I did the whole program. It took me a year and a half, and I am today a practicing shaman, and I try and live my life in the shamanic path. And what it's done is it's brought me very close to understanding spirit, but equally importantly to understanding Mother Earth, Pachamama. And I had never had a connection with nature or earth. I don't think I was an environmentalist, but the shamanic path really opened my eyes and heart to the problems of the planet. And so I became a shaman. And then a year ago, I started discovering, also thanks to Facebook, that I had a penchant for writing. So I started writing essays, and out of nowhere, original quotes started coming up. And somebody about 6 months ago said, why don't you put it all together into a book, your essays and your quotes? And so I said, okay, that's a shortcut to writing a book. And so I said, okay, I'll self-publish it, at least to begin with. And the book is about 80% done. And I was looking for a title. And initially, my humor didn't come out. And I was thinking of all kinds of serious titles. And then Penelope, who is just brilliant at this stuff, she said, that's not you, Slim. You love to laugh at yourself. And you are humorous. Why don't you try a title that's catchy and humorous? So I came up with the title Real Men Rattle, which is a little bit of a takeoff on that it's okay for real men to follow a spiritual journey and also be a shaman.
Right. It reminds me of the bumper sticker I see around here because I live in a born-again community. Real men love Jesus. So you see that everywhere. But I love real men rattle so much more. That just really, really is cool. Now, when you're going through this process and when you're going through the training, and I absolutely love the writing of Alberto Villoldo, and I know his work with his shamanic work and what he's doing. Now, when you went through your shamanic training, did you feel, what was it that resonated within you the most? Was it something that you felt, did you feel a resonance within your physical form? Did you feel an opening in regard to your heart and your compassion? Did you recognize some new perspectives or awarenesses, or were all three triggered? Were there like simultaneous openings that would happen as you were going through your shamanic training? Because I'm sure that as you were going through the process of learning, you were also expanding once again.
Well, the answer to the question is yes, 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 and yes. And the way I can describe it is if I thought that in the time preceding my shamanic training, I was going at 100 miles an hour in my journey of self-discovery, this training put me into warp drive. And it was amazing, because in order to become a shaman, whether it's following the path of the North American Native Americans or the shamans of South America or the shamans of Siberia. It's all the same approach. And that is that before you can even think of becoming a shaman, you have to do the work on yourself. And initially, we had to do so much of work on ourselves with our shadow side and letting go of that which didn't serve us using ritual and ceremony and vision quests and things like that. And it was tough because you had to look in the mirror and really you had to die spiritually in order to be born again. And I don't want a comparison with the born again people. That's not what the intention is, and I respect their path. I do,
but
this is in a different way. This is energetically, and we are all energy light bodies, and everything we say, do, act, think is energy. And this was really profound learning. And I had to really let go of so much stuff before I could even begin to start receiving what I did get out of the shamanic training. And one thing I'd like to share is that besides what I talked about earlier with a new appreciation for the planet and all beings on this planet, what Alberto also told us in the very first class is that the path of the shaman is the path of impeccability. And that really, really, really impacted me strongly. And he goes on to say that the path of impeccability doesn't mean that you're impeccable 24/7. Now, that's not possible for us as human beings, not even for the Dalai Lama. But what it really
right.
means, as Alberto said, was you live the path of impeccability the best you can. And when you come off or fall off that path, it's just increasing your awareness that you've fallen off the path to get up again and get back on the path of impeccability. And that makes it so much more accessible for us as human beings to say, yes, I want to walk the path of impeccability, the beauty way, as the shamans say. And it's okay if I fall off it. I get that awareness. I recognize. I forgive myself. And I get back on that path.
And that is a message that I wish was being shouted from the rooftops on whatever the practice or the belief or the insight would be, because you've got so many people seeking at this point in the world. You've got more than ever before, and you've got a lot of cynicism out there in regard to our economics and our crime and our attitudes. But when people look at spiritual growth, so many times there's this unrealistic perspective that spiritual growth means, you know, you're going to be sitting in meditation and not have a negative thought or feeling or emotion or a bad, you know, day, or that once you get on the spiritual path, all your troubles are going to be fine and it's going to be glorious and sunshiny and bright. Well, guess what, folks? It's going to be what you bring to it. And if it's going to be something that you really have to struggle with, then you're going to have a little bit of a wrestling match until you get over that hump. But I really love the part that you have in here of impeccability, because the first thought that I had with impeccability is perfection. And there is no perfection. So the path of impeccability being the best that you can be in that moment, and always learning when you're not. So when you do fall off, you get back up and you do a little bit better the next day. And I think that that's such an important lesson. I try to teach that with my kids. It's like, you know, look, today you did this and you did that, and tomorrow you'll do something better, you know? So it's like, it's take it where you're at and move with it. And I love that about how Alberto teaches. What was some of the most important influences for you spiritually, people-wise or practices?
It began certainly my father and now my kids and Penelope and my wife, those close, near and dear to me. And I feel very blessed that I have received and continue to receive daily lessons, even from my kids, and I'm so proud of them. But I also have to say there have been some people on the outside. I've mentioned Alberto, who's had a profound impact on my life and the way I lead my life now. I would really wish for as many of your listeners as possible at least to check out Dr. Alberto Violdo and his Four Wind Society and their program, yeah, should they be interested. It really is very profound and life-changing. But very early on, Lisa, I went to college in Calcutta, and that is the city where Mother Teresa had her her work and her the people that she was helping. And in college, we used to go and volunteer, and I have met Mother Teresa on many an occasion. And I have to say, I never understood it as a student. I was just in so much awe. And we used to sweep floors and we used to do other stuff at that place. And today I understand that she was an inspiration even as a youngster. And I remember her so well. And you talked earlier about how you can quietly do your work without trumpeting your importance or anything like that. I mean, talk about an example of that. I mean, Mother Teresa is so unique in that she just did it with no expectation of anything in return. And when I think back, somewhere subliminally, she's had a deep, deep impact on me.
Well, that's an incredible role model to have an impact from, because, you know, in our world of human existence, if we can come from a fraction of the compassion and the unconditional love that she showed, we would transform, and we would transform the world, because that is true enlightenment, embodied enlightenment in my eyes. If you can come from that place of such a humble heart, that's what it's all about. So I want
Lisa,
to bring on a caller. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to very quickly stay with the theme of this inspiration and how even our kids touch us, if I may.
Oh, certainly.
You know, when my wife died, and I know my kids will not mind my sharing the story, I had a very difficult relationship with my son, who had lost his trust in me, and very justifiably so. And I was in a hurry to regain his trust, his love, and I was trying to dialogue with him. And my daughter took me aside and she said, "Dad, stop it. You know, you are trying to push him to change. He has to change on his own schedule. And he has to see that you have changed." And Lisa, it took me 5 years, and last year, a month before he and his fiance got married, his fiance called me up and she said, "Kim would like you to do a shamanic blessing at the wedding." It was the deepest sign that things had shifted full circle, and it was a very emotional moment for me. And if we would only take time even to listen to our kids, they teach us a lot too. And that's just the story I want to share.
That's a beautiful story, Slim. It certainly is. And I'm constantly listening to my four, because I have two adult children and I have two that are in their teenage years, 12 and 14. So out of the mouths of babes, every day I sit there and I have learned to zipper my mouth and open my ears. And it is amazing when your own truth and your own, you know, what you've been teaching them comes back to teach you. That's when you know, okay, I'm all right. it's when your kids start teaching you what you've taught them, then everything's full circle and it's all good. I would love to bring on this next caller. There's somebody who's been waiting in the wings here for several minutes. I do not know who it is. So let's meet this person together, Slim, and see what they want to ask you. Hi there. This is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Is this Slim?
Yes, this is Slim.
I have you on two lines here, so I'm going to hang up one.
Okay.
Okay, there we go. So we have no caller on here, Slim, so it's just us. So in going back to talking about the shamanic work and in finding your calling after your, well, actually discovering what your call was, again, because you've had many callings in your life, after your wife's passing, you talked a lot about finding your path and getting on this path that really was resonating with you, and it all started with Many Lives, Many Masters, the book. And then you went into Alberto Villalto's shamanic work. Now, when you were going through the shamanic training and then you started to have your own clients and sessions with clients, did you find a common theme that was coming to you, or do you see or have in your own perception? I have my own perception of what I think the themes are of growth that are going on right now among the masses and people in society. Do you see a common pain, a common hurt, a common need to heal, a common issue that people are coming to you with, that there's more and more of the same issue coming to you, whether it be, you know, stress, or whether it's, you know, negative thinking, or whether it's fear-based? Is there something that you're seeing on a global level in regard to your work on an individual basis that seems to be predominant
yes.
right now?
Yes, I do. And that theme is loss. And it's not just loss in a narrow sense of loss of a partner, a spouse, a child, a parent, but it's in a broader sense, it is a loss in these days especially, a loss of a job, a loss of an identity, a loss of financial abundance because of the markets, or loss of a pet, a loss of so many things, and that loss manifests itself in people getting stuck and not being able to come out of their current feeling of loss, which manifests itself again in anger, in fear, in relationship issues. But broadly speaking, when I really delve into the issue, it's this broad sense of loss right now. People are kind of confused and stuck, and they don't know how to get out of it. And then in our work together, it's beautiful to watch small shifts happening. And here again, the work that Alberto teaches is so profound, because when you go to a doctor, the doctor is working at the physical level. If you go to a therapist, the therapist works at the level of your emotion. But when you're going to a healer, a shaman, or somebody like that who works at the level of energy, then you're working at the level of soul and spirit and your mythic journeys. And Alberto likes to say that real healing happens when you address the issues at the soul and spirit level, at the level of your mythic journeys, and then it percolates down to the emotional level and the physical level. So yes, people come. I notice this theme about loss and being stuck and not being able to come out, and that's where most of my work is focused.
And in working with your clients, is there something that you can offer the audience that's listening right now, a simple tool in regard to either calming or centering or grounding? Can you offer us, the listeners, just something that they can use in their daily life to, you know, tap back in, or even just try to eliminate some stress from your wisdom?
Yes, Lisa. And some of my clients are cancer patients. And if you look at the life of a cancer patient, they are in a constant state of stress with their treatment modalities, chemo, radiation, family situations. So they don't have a lot of time. It has to be simple. And at the risk of it sounding like a cliche, if we can just focus on our breath, just create our awareness on our breath for 5 minutes a day. And you don't have to go into a deep meditation and know a mantra or go and do transcendental meditation or something like that. But if you can just spend 5 minutes focusing on your breath and calming down and slowing down. In the West, we just don't know how to breathe. We are taught to suck it up, pull our stomach in,
right.
And that's absolutely the wrong way. And as you know, breathing is just the opposite, and taking long, deep, slow breaths. And just a small story before we end. 4 years ago, I went for some breath training, and the teacher asked me, let's check how many breaths per minute you have. And at that time, my breathing per minute, I had 20 breaths a minute. Within 3 months, I had brought it down to 6 breaths a minute. And today when
wow.
I go into deep meditation, I am at 4 breaths a minute.
Wow.
And I am 67, and I have never been in a better physical and mental state in my life. And a lot of it I credit to the ability to breathe correctly and make breathing a part of your daily practice. It's a spiritual practice.
It is a spiritual practice, and it's pretty much the basis of the spiritual practice, because if you aren't really breathing effectively and fully, you're really not having the clarity of mind and soul to really have the clarity of decision-making or input or even just moving through the daily grind of chores or what you're doing, because you've got that monkey mind going on, and if you can't, you know, calm that down in breathing. So let's go into the basics, because honestly, I know too many people that do not know how to breathe effectively. So my experience in working with people, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, everyone's a shallow breather. They're breathing like up in their chest. They're not breathing down from their stomach. They're not
yes.
blowing their stomach out. And so can you give the listeners just a little guideline in regard to how to breathe? Because, you know, breathing's great, but if they're not fully engaged in the breath, it's going to do very little.
Absolutely, and the way I tell my clients and the cancer patients who come to me is you just close your eyes and you take in deep breaths, and as you breathe in, you allow your stomach, your belly, it's called the belly breath, your belly to come out all the way. It doesn't look that good, but believe me, it's the best way of breathing, and as you breathe out again, long, deep breaths coming out, you pull your stomach in, but make sure that every iota of your breath, the long breath, goes to, imagine it going to every cell in your body, because it's more than breathing air. You are breathing in cosmic energy, prana, chi, whatever you want to call it, and that's what the life force is. So if you're taking shallow breaths, you're taking in less of the life force into every cell of your body. And the deeper and longer your breaths are, not everyone can come to 3 or 4 breaths per minute immediately, but it's a process. And just do the exercise of having a stopwatch or your watch and count how many normal breaths per minute you do. If it's above 15, try and bring it down to at least 10. And if you can get down to 5, you are a professional master breather, I would say.
Wonderful, wonderful. That helps tremendously. And we have about 2 minutes. I want to make sure that we get your websites on there again. So let's tell the audience again how they can get a hold of you. And I'll let you do
that, The website for my CD is magicofgayatri.com. Gayatri is spelled G-A-Y-A-T-R-I, magicofgayatri.com. We have a healing website. It's called restoreyoursoul.com, where you can learn about the work that Penelope and I do and something about ourselves. And Lisa, I'm hoping that the book will come out in the second half of this year. I just need to finish another 4 or 5 chapters, and I'll definitely be letting you know when it's ready. And and that's about it, I guess. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
I got 2 free smartphones when I switched to Metro PCS.
One for him and one for me.
It's not for you. It's for people like me.
And parrots.
I knew I should have gotten a dog.
Get 2 free Samsung Galaxy J3 Prime smartphones when you switch 2 lines to Metro PCS and enjoy a 4G LTE network that's more reliable than ever before. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network or active on Metro PCS in the past 90 days. See store for details, terms, and conditions.
Hello.
Hello.
I got 2 free smartphones when I switched to Metro PCS.
One for him and one for me.
It's not for you. It's for people like me.
And parrots.
I knew I should have gotten a dog.
Get 2 free Samsung Galaxy J3 Prime smartphones when you switch 2 lines to Metro PCS and enjoy a 4G LTE network that's more reliable than ever before. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network or active on Metro PCS in past 90 days. See store for details, terms, and conditions.